Okay, my name is Donna Miller Nichelle, last name Burkett. I am 61 years young. Today is Saturday, July 14th, 2007. And I am recording this at the City of Milwaukee Main Library downtown. And my partner, my interviewer, is my friend.
Okay. I'm the interviewer, and my name is Julia Kleppen, and I'm 67, and today's date is, like Donna said, the 14th of July, and we're down at the Milwaukee Public Main Library, and I'm happy that she's calling me a friend. So, Donna, you said you were born in Chicago?
Yes, I was born in Chicago, Illinois, Cook County Hospital. I don't think at that time there was any other. And my family moved here. We moved here to Milwaukee. I think I was like 8 or 9 when I got here. So that made it about 52, 53, 54, 55, somewhere. My math is not that great, but you do the math.
Yeah.
When I first came to Milwaukee, Milwaukee used to be a very clean city. I mean, it was so clean. There was no trash on the streets. You know, the streets were so safe. I know as kids, my sister and I have one sister, no brothers. It's just the two of us. We used to play outside in the alleys. We could take shortcuts through people's yards and play in the alley all night. It was no problem. We never thought anything bad could happen to us. There was no heard of shoot. People weren't shooting each other. And it was just so safe. We never locked our doors.
Wow.
I mean, didn't
have
to.
Amazing.
It was very good here in the 50s, 60s. I don't know when this crime wave started, but
yep.
It's here.
Now, Donna, you... at what age do you think that you realized that you were, what do you call yourself, gay or a lesbian?
Gay, I always knew it. Ever since I was a kid, like 7, 8, I always knew I was attracted to females.
Mm-hmm. And how did your family feel about that?
Well, I don't think it really didn't make them a difference. I was like a tomboy, and then I just grew up. And so I don't think it really made a difference to them until I decided to try to marry. Then that's when they kind of, some of my aunts and my grandmother kind of try to, you know, hit the fan belt. And like I told them, I don't have to ring my exact words. I'll never forget it. Because called them all together to tell them because the newspapers were bugging me and taking pictures, and I wanted any of them that had a problem with it to know about what was going on so they know how to, however they want to address their friends. So I told them I was going to try to get married, and if you didn't like it, then I didn't have to ever ring anybody's phone or their doorbell. You know, they lived their life, and I was living mine. My mother was fine with it. My grandmother ended up coming around, and so did my aunts, because they saw they weren't going to change me. I'm still kind of headstrong about whatever I do. So that was the end of them getting in my way. You know, and I feel like once you state your case, people just have to accept you or not, you know. So mm-hmm. If they do, fine. And if they don't, you know, you still have your life to live, so.
Yeah.
whatever road you choose to go down in life, or even if you don't choose it, but whatever road you go down, it's your decision to stay on that road. So, you know, just know that it's your decision.
And you said at one point that you left home at the age of 16.
Because I didn't like orders. I didn't like being told what time I had to come in, you know. I was, like I said, bullheaded. So I left home, I ran away, and I moved right next door with my friends, you know. But I did get a job, you know, and I was really kind of, you know, trying to support myself. After I graduated from high school, then I moved from them and moved out, and I got a room in a hotel.
Wow.
You know, I worked at a car wash, and then I was still going to school. It was pretty hard because you only made, I could sit up there at the car wash all day and not get called to work, you know. So it was one of those type of jobs. It wasn't a real job, like you go in and punch a time clock. If the boss say you can work, then you work. And if you don't, you just sit there and you don't get paid, you know. So that's the way I started. And then I got a job at, I don't remember, I was a bookkeeper for a while. And then I got into the factory and I stayed there. I mean, not that one factory, but I just went from factory job to factory job to factory job.
But you did go into the military first, right?
Oh yeah, I went into there. I may not be saying things in order, but I went into, I joined the Army. I wanted to join when I was in high school, but my mom wouldn't sign for me. So when I got old enough, so where she didn't have to sign for me, I went in. I thought I was going to, I joined the Army to see the world, but they fooled me. I saw Alabama with George Wallace as the governor then, and that was enough for me. It was real love. That was the first time in my life that I had really ran into racism real strong. I mean, out and out. I mean, I probably ran into it. I just didn't recognize it. But I ran into blatant racism. You know, they had the signs colored, used entrance, and I never saw that before. I mean, you know, I never saw it, and that just really got me. And, you know, and I had just finished marching, you know, for open housing, you know, and
oh, you'd already been out with Father Grappi before that and Vel Phillips.
Right, I had been marching, but I had never been confronted, really. I mean, I remember when we crossed the 16th Street Bridge, I remember when we got to the end of the bridge, it was this gun shop, the name of it, I'll never forget it because it was a sight for me. Casanova, that was the name of the gun shop. And they, and when we came across the bridge, that was the first thing I saw, and a group of people telling us to get off the side of town. And, you know, I remember that. I thought we was going to die right there.
And so, they were holding guns?
Well, no, they, I don't think they had guns. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I think they had bricks and, you know, and sticks. That's what I think they had. But they were in front of the gun shop, you know.
It's around there.
But I remember that. That was racism too, but it still wasn't as deep as seeing these signs, no colored and colored entrance, that kind of stuff. I had never seen that stuff before in my life. I was just, and I was so militant then. You know, I couldn't get served. I just took everything on the counter and just knocked it off. I could have got lynched right there. I didn't even, I was too stupid to realize that I was in danger. I was just so angry.
So After you got out of the military, you came back to Milwaukee?
Right. I came back to Milwaukee, right. My home.
And when did you start getting involved in the gay and lesbian action things and then things like music, too?
I have no idea when. It just all kind of happened, you know, just stumbling around, you know, trying to make a life, I guess. I was already gay when I went into service, you know. I was always gay. That wasn't a question. It was just, you know, the... You know, one place would lead me to another. You know, I just don't remember how I stumbled on. You know, it's just a cumulative, I believe, because I was militant and I was gay. And I did not believe that the government had any business telling me who I could marry or who I could not marry. That wasn't their business. I thought their business was trying to run the country, not me.
Right.
You know, not my personal life.
Yeah.
So that was the reason for, you know, really trying to marry legally, you know, was because it wasn't for them to say that, you know, they wasn't supposed to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And I still don't feel like they're supposed to be doing it, telling people who they can marry.
Right.
You know.
So you, when you came back, you met Manonia?
Yes, probably at a club, you know, at a, you know.
A nightclub, sort
right,
of.
Right, at a bar, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, that's where I met her. I did meet her at a club.
And both of you started going to the...
We used to go to GPU meetings.
Right.
How, I don't even remember how I found out about them. You know, GPU, that was Gay People's Union. That's what it was. And I don't remember a whole lot of things about it. I just remember, like, back in the 60s and the 70s, like, the guys, the only time they could come out and drag was Halloween. So if they be caught out and drag any other time, police could and a lot of times did arrest them. And so I guess they would use their phone call to call GPU, and somebody from GPU would call all the members that wanted to be notified, and then we would show up in court at their court date, whole bunch of us, you know. And then another thing, back in the day, they didn't have, we weren't separated with race or sex. You know, it was like one bar, we were all one big gay family. We weren't that big, but, you know, it was everybody. And then I had never heard of people being called, like, the men were gay and the women were lesbians. Everybody was gay. You know, and I think that other distinction, when they started separating the men bar, the guy bars and the girl bars, and you know, then they start separating everybody. And I guess you break, they break you down and make your group smaller, and then they can, you know, make you fight against each other. I think that's all why all that breakdown came. But in the back there, we went to one bar, and it was the Castaways on 2nd and Pittsburgh right there. It's called a ball game now. That was Jimmy's bar, Jimmy Zengill. That was his bar. Yep.
And you said sometimes the police would harass people.
Oh, yeah. They used to drive past and take write down people's license plate numbers that was parked, you know, at by the bar, around the bar. And then they would call, make calls to their home. Say, do you know, tell their spouse. You know, I guess they check and see if they're married or whatever. And probably was selective calling, you know, that they did. And they used to say, do you know your car is parked down by the gay bar? And, you know, tell the spouse that, you know. It was just a mess here. But it all got cleaned up. I mean, well, I don't know how cleaned up it got. But, you know, after after the governor, I think it was Lucy, first thing he did when he got in office was sign this gay rights bill. That's what I call it. I don't know what, you know, legally it was, but to me it was the gay rights bill that you could no longer discriminate against gay people. You could not tell them they could not live here, they could rent here or buy here or work here or whatever because they are gay. You know, when he signed that bill, I remember it was a Thursday night because I was at work when the bill became legal, when it, you know, and I remember taking my cap up and say, yeah, I'm finally legal. You know, I can finally admit that I'm gay and don't have to worry about going to jail, you know. It was really a big thing with me. I don't know who else celebrated, but I did.
Great.
But then they started opening up. Even with the marriage thing, it was such a big thing here. The papers was just following us around, you know, wanting interviews here, radio interviews. We had even got an invitation to go to New York to talk to on the Phil Donahue show, but we didn't go. I don't remember why, but we didn't go. We had gotten an invitation. It was really a big thing. Real big thing here.
And that was in 71 when you and Manonia went
Evans,
down.
Tried to.
Manonia Evans.
We went down to City Hall to take out a marriage license. That was the first step. I remember that. We filled out the little application thing, and then they told us, they was at a desk, and they told us that we couldn't marry because we were both females. Then they told us to leave out this door, just a side door. And when we got out in the hallway of the courthouse, you know, then all these photographers and all the papers and stuff was there, you know, kind of like, what is going on here? You know, I don't know how they found out we was coming. I don't know any of that kind of stuff. I just know after we left out that door, they was out there.
They were hounding you a bit?
Yeah. Following us around, they found out where we lived, and at first we wouldn't, we only would let them photograph us from the back or silhouette. We did that for maybe about a few weeks, and then we finally let them take a full picture of us and our faces, you know. It wasn't that we were ashamed or anything, it was just we figured we'd keep them in suspense for a while. Who are these people?
So you said that basically it was Manonia's idea to go down and do this.
Yeah.
And so she must have been pretty political person,
right,
too.
She was. I was probably active more. But she was a little more, she went to UW. She was going to UW to school, and I was going to, they used to call it MIT, it was MATC, you know.
A technical college.
MIT, And she was from a political family, so to speak. I mean, that were, I don't want to say higher up, but they were on a different realm than my family. My family was down to earth. My grandfather started the barbecue business here in Milwaukee. His name was Black King. He was down on the Haymarket, and he had the best barbecue in town. Wow. Everybody used to come to him, and his restaurant burnt down. And then he opened up another one on 7th and Galena. And then finally he opened up the big one. My grandfather had the first sit-down restaurant for blacks in Milwaukee. It was beautiful. When the entertainers, the black entertainers, used to come to Milwaukee to do the shows, they would always stop at my grandfather's restaurant. And if my sister and I was there, they'd take us back. And we'd go backstage to the shows. They would take us back to meet the performers.
Wow.
Yeah. But her father was a minister And he was some kind of big wheel in government. I don't even know his first name, but his last name was Evans. And they were, you know how the government people are. The people that work for the government always thought they was over everybody, you know. Higher echelon people, that's what he thought. And he told me that he'd rather his daughter marry a drug dealer, a dope head, a drunk, a wife beater, anybody but another woman. That's what he told me. That's what he thought of us. And it was pretty hard as far as her family was concerned because they were so, you know, upper echelon that their daughter turned out like this. It, to them, it was all bad. With my family, my mom told me, whatever you be the best. Try to be the best. And like I said, some of my family that lived in Chicago, they didn't want to accept it. But they already knew. It wasn't no big surprise. They already knew because I just went from a little, from blue jeans and undershirts to dress pants and shirts to me, you know, that's all the difference was in my, you know, I just grew up. But it was always the same, you know, so they didn't have a big, their biggest thing was the name thing. So I told them, well, if you have a problem with me using my name, then just say you don't know who I am.
So now, Manonia's father, he was very unhappy about the two of you trying to get married.
Oh, yeah.
And that he eventually, how did it come that he, how did he treat her?
Oh, he treated her really bad. He threatened to kill her. And he had, I said he kidnapped. To me, that's what it was. He kidnapped her, took her to his house and locked her in the room. And she was locked up for about a week. I didn't know where she was, you know. I really didn't know where she was, but I didn't find out till after. Eventually, her mother had pity on her. That's what she said, and unlocked the door and let her out, you know. Mm. But he was just determined that he said he'd kill her first.
He was going to keep her separate from
him.
Yeah. And you said he stole her car, too.
Yeah, he took her car. Well, he said he bought it so he could take it. That's what he said.
So
I don't know. And I don't know what happened to her. In fact, everything is so blurry after everything we became public. That's when everything just was going so fast. I can't really remember. But I know she did move to Alaska, and I do know that she ended up marrying a guy and had a few kids, you know.
And that guy was a friend of her dad's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I don't know if he paid him or what, you know. That's kind of horrible to think, you know, that somebody would, you know, rather see to me, as long as your child is happy.
That's
important. You do what you can, you know, but then the ultimate, the last straw is their happiness. I mean, who wants to live in a world when they're just totally unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
Might as well be dead.
Now, did you and Manonia have a commitment ceremony of some
yes,
sort?
Yes, we did. It was at, let me think. I think it was at Jefferson Hall, that was on Fond du Lac and, like, off of Center. I mean, somewhere around the Center Street area in Fond du Lac. And I think that was on Christmas Day.
Ah.
Ceremony was... So that was Christmas Day on 71. So when they started hounding us, the media started hounding us, it had to be sometime in December.
Hmm.
It had to be in December because, it had to be.
And that was that, then that was, you had the commitment ceremony before you went down to get a marriage license.
No, we tried to get the license first.
You tried to get the license in October.
And then And then we had a date because we had a lawyer, I remember. And his name was James Wood. Wood or Woods, I can't remember. Uh-huh. But I don't know what happened with him, but we had a date because we lost the first case, I remember, because we sued the state of Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And we lost the first case. Then we had a case, a date to be in Madison, and we were supposed to appear in front of Judge John Reynolds. I remember that. And I remember at the time, he was a very lenient, liberal judge.
Uh-huh.
Liberal.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't know the date. And I remember seeing this little article about, like, big as a tip of the ink pen in the paper, that nobody showed up for Mark, and it was dismissed.
Huh.
We didn't know anything about the date. But I remember reading that, seeing that little tiny article. I don't even know how I found it, you know,
uh-huh.
in the paper. I was just reading the paper and just stumbled across it.
And Manonia worked for her father.
Yeah, for Model Cities.
Right. He ran some kind of Model Cities program.
Uh-huh.
And then he fired her.
Yeah, he fired her. And I got kicked out of school. And some friends took us in. Jet Magazine from Chicago came in and did a big interview with us. And it said it was like, I think it was like 6 pages in Jet Magazine, but can't get it now. A friend of mine says he has one, and that was in still 71, all of, you know,
uh-huh.
but I don't have it. And my sister told me she even tried to write them to get another copy, but no response from them. But some friends took us in. I remember that. Two gay guys took us in. We stayed with them till we got on our feet, till we got jobs and got, you know, able to get another place. And
well, that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it was after that time of trying to, of the commitment ceremony that her father kind of...
No, her father went berserk before the ceremony.
Ah.
Before the ceremony. After we went public with our faces,
mm-hmm.
you know, at first the whole city was just didn't know who we were.
Uh-huh.
They just know, like, two females tried to marry. That's all, like, the headlines in the paper would say. Then they would show a silhouette or the back pose. Nobody knew who we were. We did that for a few weeks, you know. But we did go through with the commitment ceremony. And that was Christmas Day. We didn't allow any media
There.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot of people, they didn't want to be photographed. So they made us promise, you know, you know, that. So that's the way that was. And then afterwards is when, I don't remember, you know, what really happened, how we got separated. I don't remember all of that afterwards. I don't remember a whole lot before either. Things was just happening so fast. And then I didn't think it was such a big deal. It was just, seemed like to me just common sense that the government can't just tell a citizen who they can marry and who they cannot marry. I mean, it wasn't a big deal to me. That's probably why I can't remember all of, if I had known that it was going to be such a big deal, 20 or 30, 40 years later, maybe I would have made some mental notes or kept some articles, but it really wasn't big. I didn't know, you uh-huh. know, the magnitude of what was really happening. You know, I didn't know that we would still be fighting for these same rights 50 years later, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it seemed like these are rights that we got through the Constitution. I mean, you know, these rights were given us, you know. That's what I felt And I still feel that way, you know, that you can choose to marry. I mean, it's like we're in these countries where they have the prearranged marriages and all that kind of stuff. You know, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they telling you can't marry this person, so they might as well just say, here, marry this one, like her daddy did. You know?
So now you went to work for...
AC Spark Plug.
AC Spark Plug, and you were the first woman on the...
Oh, yeah, we had, I went to work for them in 76. Well, I got hired in 74, but General Motors had this massive layoff. So, anyway, they started this robot line.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, the guys were the only ones that was being trained for. And I just wanted to run. I just wanted to learn how to run one. You know, it wasn't because only men were doing it, and I knew I could do it. It was just because it looked like it was an easy job. So, if I wasn't the first female, I was one of the first. I know I was the first black woman. And I used to work with all these guys, right? And they used to write these signs and send them around the...
Assembly
line. I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay, you know?
Oh,
and when I'm getting ready to throw this party, that's where I saw the signs, you know? And I know they thought I was going to freak out, but I just kept on working because, you know, I'd say, okay, they want to mess with me, but I ain't even trying to feel them. So I just didn't let them bother me. You know, it didn't bother me because they turned out to be a pretty good bunch of guys, really. I mean, when you got to know them, and I guess they had to know me, too, because I think they thought because I was so small that they were going to have to be doing my work for me, you know. And that's why they didn't want me. That's why they was trying to chase me off. But when they saw I was trying to do my own job, I don't care how long it took me, I was going to learn it, you know. And then they used to do stupid stuff. And when they saw that I wouldn't run back and tell the supervisor on how they used to try to sabotage my machine, my robot, you know, then they just accepted me in. And then they start, when anybody new would come to the line, they would do the same thing. You know, they would give them the same treatment, sabotage theirs, you know, so it wasn't that they did me any special or any different. It was just that they wanted to see if they could take it. They wanted to run the line, and that was that.
So, and then you also joined a group called Lesbians of Color.
Oh, yeah, LOC, yeah. I don't know how that, I don't remember how that, I had a stroke, so a lot of things, you know, weren't really like, I did it because at the time it seemed like the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't really a big thing. So it didn't stand out in my brain. I mean, as being something, you know, that commendable or anything, was just something you did, you know. So,
well, that was kind of a social group.
Yes, it was a social group, and they used to...
But they celebrated Martin Luther King's
birthday. Right, they used to have,
and...
they used to have potluck for his birthday, and I used to spin the records for their birth, for that party. And it was really nice, and it was all walks of life, all different colors. It was just a real good mixture of people. You know, and I just really enjoyed being a part of them. I hated that they dispersed, you know, because it was really fun. And you met a lot of people. In fact, that's how I met you, Julie.
Right, right.
That's how I met you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were a good DJ.
Yep, I used to love the music, and it was music. It wasn't this rap stuff. It was real music,
right.
You know.
Did you DJ for other events?
Yes, I did. For lots of other events and at bars. No matter where I went, I refused to play rap, and I only would play the music that I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it meant that, because I have lost a couple jobs because I refused to play the music that the bar owners want me to play.
Mm-hmm.
Only play music with a purpose or, you know, love, you know, would, wouldn't play anything that was about hatred or...
Mm-hmm. Or calling women names
right.
and stuff.
Oh, that, and that's not music, but right. Yeah, wouldn't play any of that.
So today, when I picked you up, you had made a CD for a friend.
Oh yeah,
with some
I do
music.
That. I make. I don't sell them either. Like I make CDs for friends, you know, and I just give it to them. You know, I don't sell. I don't believe that. You know, I enjoy doing it, and I just take my time and I give it to them. I haven't yet to sell one. I don't try to. And then people tell me, well, you got so old music, you could really make some money. But no, I'm not trying. I do it because I enjoy it.
Yep. Yeah. You were active in a statewide gay and lesbian group.
Action, Wisconsin.
Action, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Action, Wisconsin. We went up to Madison a few times. We used to... go up to the Capitol and have meetings up there, and we were behind Tammy Baldwin. I mean, we were not just me per se, but you know, we rallied behind her because we thought she was a good. She was in school when she first. I think she was in school. She was in school when she first started to break into politics up there in Madison,
mm-hmm.
and she had a good head on her shoulders, and she still does, and she's going on. And I'm very proud of her.
Yeah. She's great. So, you've been pretty active all your life in politics. And do you talk to people at the senior center, Washington Park?
I surely do. In fact, I got a chance to talk to Scott Walker. He came there, and I was really hot at him. I was so angry because he was just firing all of these park workers and... You know, and I was like, what do you come down here for to see what you're getting ready to close this down to? You know, I was really hot. And I know, and then I was making such a scene, you know, and I know he was afraid to kind of say something to me. He didn't know how loud I was going to get because I was pretty loud, you know, because I was really angry with him.
He's a county exec,
yeah.
And he's been very, very restrictive about a lot of stuff.
Yes,
he cut back everything he can.
Yeah, but then he talked, and he came back, and he talked to me, and I told him, I said, you know what, I'm going to tell you something. I said, I've done everything this country has asked of me. I finished high school. I got a little bit of college. I worked. I paid taxes. I served my country. I said, now I've had a stroke. I can't even get to my doctor. The county transit doesn't go to New Berlin.
Oh.
You know, now what? You think that's you wondering why I'm angry. Well, why do you think I'm angry? I mean, you think about it. I've given all of my life. I've given. And now that I can't even get a ride to my doctor. Now, what can you do about that? And do you know that guy called me back, Scott Walker? He took my number. And he has, he got in touch with some people. And this lady that comes down to Washington Park, I guess she works for Interfaith.
Mm-hmm.
But his office must have got in touch with her because she came up to me, told me if I let her know when I have a doctor's appointment, she will make sure I'm able to get there.
Great.
And I really thought that was nice of him that he didn't forget. You know, I'm just one little voice, you know,
mm-hmm.
but I raised a little heck with him.
So, 1 minute. All right. Well, it's been great listening to all these things. I know you have a lot more. I wish we'd talked more about when you went with Val Phillips and Father Grappi.
Oh, we did the marching for open housing. My mom said, oh, baby. I wanted to go to Alabama and march with King,
mm-hmm.
but she wouldn't have that. She wouldn't have that. She watched how they sent them dogs and them hoses out.
Yeah.
But she said, this is enough. I wore out a pair of tennis shoes that summer. We marched for open housing.
Yeah. Well, you've done a lot of great things, and I'm sure grateful for it. So... the stroke has slowed you down, but it hasn't stopped you, so that's good.
Yeah, the only thing I do now is run my mouth. That's the only thing I can run now.
So thanks a lot. It was great.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm sure glad I did.